This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Robert Smith in Washington, D.C., sitting in for Neil Conan. We are all time travelers, just the really dull kind, plodding through the fourth dimension one pathetic second at a time. But although we're all obeying the chronological speed limit, perhaps we don't have to. They say there's no universal law of physics that outlaws time travel. So let's jump this train off the track. What would it be like to freeze time, to expand it, rewind it, or fast forward it? Do you want to go back in time to witness, the signing of the Declaration of Independence? Or maybe the Magna Carta? Why not the Code of Hammurabi? Or maybe you just want to figure out how long it'll take for us to get those flying cars that we were promised. We asked people from a diversity of fields to answer the question, what time and what place would you like to travel to and why? Later in this hour, it may sound like an oxymoron, but we're talking about reported fiction and a new piece about Heath Ledger's last days published in Esquire magazine. But first, welcome to the Talk of the Nation time machine. We want to hear from you, too. What time and place would you like to time travel to and why? Don't go back and kill anyone, we'll say that, but something that you would like to witness, some place you'd like to be, some unanswered question that you want answered in time. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. Our email address is talk@npr.org, and you can comment on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. And we begin with Neil deGrasse Tyson. He's an astrophysicist and director of the Hayden Planetarium at the Museum of Natural History in New York. He joins us now from member station WLIU in Southampton, New York. Welcome.
Pleasure to be here with you here and now.
Here and now. It's going to be a very long hour if you give the wrong answer to the next question, which is time travel possible?
Well, it's easy to go in the future. That one we've known since 1905 with the rules of special relativity laid out by Albert Einstein, that if you just sort of travel fast enough, your clock ticks more slowly than that of everybody else. So you go into their future. You don't actually go into your own future.
So if I want to skip this presidential race because it's taking too long, I can go very fast or near a high-gravity object, I remember, right?
Yeah, either of those will work just fine, high-gravity objects or very high speeds, and you can come back at some arbitrarily distant time in the future. The problem is, while you might get a fun send-off, depending on how far in the future you go, no one will have remembered you, depending on when you come back. So you want to sort of take friends with you and things, but that kind of going into the future is not as fun as you might think it would be.
Yes.
Because you don't come back. You don't come back.
Yeah. What's the fun of seeing how the world's going to turn out if you can't impress your friends?
Yeah, there you go. You want to come back and say, look what I saw. You know, it's like, no.
A more difficult question. How do we travel back in time?
Well, there's, as you correctly noted in the intro to the show, there's no sort of law of physics, known law of physics, that prevents anyone from going backwards in time. But there are some sort of logical paradoxes that would come about if that were fully enabled. For example, if you went back in time and prevented your parents from meeting, then you would have never been born enough to go back in time and prevented your parents from meeting. So there are these issues related to backwards time travel that greatly confound the creativity of thought in that regime. But it turns out, I know some colleagues, I'm not among them, but there's some really smart colleagues, the top people working on the problem of backwards time travel, which involves hugely distorted regions of the fabric of space and time. And you take certain trajectories in and around them, and you pass another person taking another kind of mirror image trajectory, and you can actually travel into the past. And so I have to kind of trust their calculations because they're extremely invoking the rules of general relativity far beyond my capacity to calculate. But they seem to know that it's possible, but only if you have the power and the energy resources to curve the fabric of space-time yourself.
Well, that's not a problem. This is talk radio here. So why don't we just accept that as a given and talk about the fun part. So we've built the machine, we've given you the time, we've given you the power, which, let me guess, is not going to be operated by gasoline, but we'll figure out the power issue, and we want to take you back somewhere. So, Neil deGrasse Tyson, what time and place would you like to time travel to?
Yeah, let's hope it's not fossil fuels we're using there. That would be embarrassing to go back
and
in time
expensive.
Or anywhere in time.
And expensive.
No, I think about this all the time. I'd like to go back and hang out with Isaac Newton. I've read practically every word he's ever written, and the guy was plugged into the universe. And I keep asking myself, what would I bring him to show him that I was from the future? And the easy thought is, well, why not bring a cell phone? But, of course, cell phones don't work when there is no one else that has a cell phone to talk to. So the one thing that I imagine I could bring him that would transform time in his day would be a highly functioning scientific calculator. And you can bring, like, you know, a decade's worth of batteries with you. And then he could see how you can just calculate things that would take him days and days, weeks, or perhaps even be impossible to compute. And I would learn from him what kind of insights he brought to bear on his discoveries. And it's fun to think about whether people like that were, in fact, themselves time travelers, these people who transformed our understanding of our place in the universe just by their own brilliance. And maybe they were all sworn to secrecy about their actual their actual real past. But it's fun to speculate on that and possibly even contribute to works of fiction in the process.
Now, Isaac Newton's certainly brilliant in his time. Do you worry that you would go back and be disappointed? After all, you learned everything he had to teach you when you were a young man. Do you think you'd go back and think, wow, you know, this guy would be working in a fast food restaurant if you were in the 21st century?
That's an excellent question. But the answer to that is plumb no, because for an example, he discovered the laws of motion, the laws of gravity, laws of optics, and practically on a dare, when he couldn't answer a question about why the planets orbit in ellipses, he went back and, like, invented a new branch of mathematics to solve that problem called calculus. And then he turned 26. So there are people today struggling with calculus well into adulthood, and he does it just kind of as a side thing. So the man was brilliant by anybody's measure.
Okay.
And so I just want to, like, be there with the guy. But I would caution, there are some events, people like sort of watching famous events like the Titanic. There are a lot of people we know now want to go back and see the Titanic. And it's fun to speculate whether, in fact, the day that the time machine is invented, that so many people go back and see the Titanic sink that, in fact, that's why it sank, because everyone overloaded the ship. All the time travelers from the future went back to the ship, and the ship couldn't accommodate the extra weight.
You're blowing my mind, dude, as they say when you bring up time travel. I actually picture you being like Bill and Ted when you meet Isaac Newton, getting down on your knees and saying, I'm not worthy.
I love Bill and Ted. That's a sleeper movie for me. That's one of my favorites of all. I try to bring them all to the present and try to get an A on my report card, too.
Exactly. Let's try and get some callers in on this conversation. People have great ideas of where to go.
We'll talk with
John. John is calling us from Little Rock, Arkansas. Hey, John. Where should I set the time machine for you?
Hello.
Hello, John. Where should I set the time machine? We're headed.
I'd like to travel back to the California Gold Rush days.
California Gold Rush, because you want to be a rich man with the price of gold.
Well, I think just the prospect of fame and fortune around every corner, and of course the colorful characters that were involved in that would be fascinating.
I would warn you, sir, that if you read the retellings of those stories, and it's quite there's the romance of the exploration and the kind of fun lawlessness of the time, but then you, like, look a little closer and you realize there was no sanitation, there was no, and you get a little closer, it begins to smell, so there are a lot of times in the past that I don't long for simply because they're kind of cleansed in the memory of those who retell it. But to actually live it would require a level of tolerance of absence of hygiene and other things that today we take for granted.
I see, yes.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you very much, John, and thank you for the sobering analysis, Neil deGrasse Tyson.
I'm sorry. I don't want to mess up the dreams there, but I'm just trying to be reality check.
We appreciate you joining us and showing us where you wanted to go. Neil deGrasse Tyson is an astrophysicist with the American Museum of Natural History and host of PBS's Nova Science Now. He joined us from member station WLIU in Southampton, New York. Let's go now to Joseph Ellis. He's a Pulitzer Prize-winning professor of history at Mount Holyoke. He joins us by phone from his office in South Hadley, Massachusetts. Hello, Dr. Ellis.
How you doing?
I'm doing great. So, I have the time machine. Where do you want to go?
The afternoon of July 2nd, 1863, a mountain ridge called Little Round Top in the town of Gettysburg.
Is this a tourist attraction?
It is now. but at that particular moment, the pivotal event in the pivotal battle, in the pivotal war in American history was about to happen. And I want to go back and talk to people and find out how it really happened. The left flank of the Union Army at Little Round Top was commanded by Joshua Chamberlain and his Maine soldiers, state of Maine. And if the Confederate Army had been able to flank him, and they almost did, and you can see this in the novel Killer Angels or in the HBO film Gettysburg, by the way, and then the Battle of Gettysburg would have gone a different way. And I'm not sure the Civil War would have turned out the same way. So there's a lot at stake at these moments. And what supposedly happened is that Chamberlain gave an order. Once his men ran out of ammunition, his casualties were really, really heavy, he gave an order to charge down the hill with fixed bayonets. And it so surprised the Confederates that they retreated, and that turned the tide. It's unclear whether he really ever gave that order.
Huh. So would you be worried about your safety going back to a time like that? And they would say, who are you and why are you here listening in?
I'm one of these historians that sort of presumes that bullets will bounce right off me. And
why not? We're doing time travel.
Yeah. And well, I mean, maybe you're being facetious, but I think that I'm back there, I guess, with the presumption that once I get there, I'm not a participant in the events. I'm someone who's like a journalist, and I'm trying to interrogate the witnesses, Chamberlain, as to whether he ever gave the order, and the men as to what they thought they were fighting for. Were they fighting for the Union? Were they fighting and slavery? There's evidence on both sides of that in the history book. So I'm almost back here, you know, moving back there to sort of clear up what seems to me a rather intriguing little set of questions.
Absolutely. Well, we will also take your phone calls for our listeners of where they want to go in our NPR time machine when we return from the break. Joseph Ellis is a Pulitzer Prize-winning professor of history at Mount Holyoke. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Robert Smith in Washington, D.C., in for Neil Conan. Here at Talk of the Nation, the fourth dimension means nothing to us. We're talking time travel this hour, and we want to hear from you. What time and place would you like to travel to and why? Give us a call at 800-989-8255. Our email address is talk@npr.org, and check out our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Let's go straight to our callers. Everyone's got some great, great stories here. Maria, from Lacey, New Jersey, where are you going now in our time machine?
I'm actually racing to pick my daughter up at school.
So you would like a little bit more time for that, but where do you want to go in our time machine?
Well, I actually would love to meet face-to-face with, it. I don't want to be too religious, but Jesus, you know, it would be interesting to be in a time to witness one of his miracles. Dead silence.
No, not at all. I mean, I find this fascinating, and it would. I wonder if any of it would be a test of your faith, if the miracle was not as the Bible described it, if it was something different, if Jesus were a more philosophical being, or if the miracles were exaggerated, would this shake your faith, or do you think you'd find something different?
I don't think it would shake my faith. I do have a strong faith towards Jesus, and I do strongly believe that the miracles, you know, did happen. I just envy the time then that I wasn't around, that I didn't get to witness it, and that here I am just reading about it and being educated about it, you know, during church and stuff like that. I'm sure everyone has that question. Were some of them real, or are they fables of, you know, storytellers, you know? But you have to go with your faith, and if you do have that faith in God, then, you know that it's to be true, you know, based on the the apostles, you know, and what they've educated us on.
Well, it would be an interesting journey the entire time. Thanks for your call, Maria. Let's talk with John from Winchester, Virginia. Where would you like to go in time machine?
Oh, hi. I'd like to go back to the early rabbinic period around 85 CE, because I think there was a big debate over the oral law between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Ishmael, and I'd like to see really what went on as opposed to what is said to have gone on.
Would you have a specific question? Is there something you've always wanted to know?
Yeah, well, for one thing, I'd like to know who was Rabbi Ishmael. I have an idea that he might have been the famous apostate Elisha ben Abuya.
Now, I don't know these names. This is a very important question in the field of rabbinic studies. Is that right?
Yeah, yes. It's a very big question. And I think there was a conflict. That's my point about the oral law. I'd like to see what really transpired in those early years of the rabbinic movement. That's basically it.
Oh, well, very interesting. Thanks for your call, John. Let's talk to Hal. Hal joins us from Edmond, Oklahoma.
Go ahead.
Hey, Hal.
Go ahead. Is this for Hal?
Yes, we're traveling through time. We need to know where to stop.
Sorry. I'd like to go back to somewhere in the middle 40s, early 40s, and be something like one of the lead physicists on the atomic bomb project at Los Alamos, you know, like be Oppenheimer's gopher, and just watch that whole process of how that came together, and then go out there for the first test at Alamogordo.
Are you a physicist now? Do you think you know more than they did back then?
Physicist by training, engineer by profession nowadays.
Now, the interesting question.
I know what's going on.
The interesting question would be, not only could you go back and perhaps help them get the atomic bomb quicker because you understand the physics, but you would also have sort of a moral question, too. Would you want to tell them how the world has turned out and how their weapon would be used?
Possibly. It's an interesting talk. Maybe something, I think, I'd like to carry the message back because, you know, in this day and age, we kind of see that what they were doing worked. You know, the bombs were used twice and not since then. And, you know, we went through a Cold War and got out of that. So, you know, maybe they were right.
Perhaps. They'd be interested to know that thousands of these bombs existed and not just in the hands of the United States. They might be curious about that also.
I agree with you. It's not, you know, you don't know what decisions they would have made, but
yeah.
You're right. It would have been interesting to carry that information and tell them what the next 50, 60, 70 years
just,
is going to
just
look
the
like.
Look on their faces alone would be great. Thanks, Hal, for your phone call. Let's go now to Glenn in St. Louis, Missouri. Hey, Glenn.
Hello.
Where are we headed?
My comment is related to a show that was on Fresh Air today, actually, as I was listening.
Well, we're talking about time travel, so perhaps you're trying to travel back in the NPR schedule. We're going to go to Mark in San Jose, California. Hey, Mark.
Hey. Well, I salute your guests and Hal's interest in science and math. Mine is technology and culture, so the choice is easy. It's ancient Rome. I just got back from a trip there and got to see Pompeii and, of course, the Colosseum and just amazing. In fact, Pompeii is wonderful because you almost don't need a time machine. It's so well preserved, you can really feel like what it might have been like.
Well, seeing Rome, I mean, you must want to say, what was it like when this stuff was new? I mean, imagine how beautiful it was. Is that what you want to see, or are there some unanswered questions back in ancient Rome?
Well, there's a couple of things. You know, our tour guides around Rome indicated that the culture was so technologically advanced. There's some things about their technology we still don't understand. For example, the incredibly hard stone that comprises Nero's bird bath—it's like about 20 feet wide. The guide at least explained that even with a diamond studded drill, a tipped drill, it would have taken, you know, an impossible amount of time to carve that out. Things like that, or just standing in the middle of the Colosseum, and you just don't appreciate how enormous and grand in both the design and technology.
Let's just make it clear that you may not want to be actually in the middle of the Colosseum. There could be events going on that you don't want to be part of.
Fair enough.
So be careful back there. Mark, thanks for the phone call. Joining us now is Judith Martin, also known as Miss Manners. She's a syndicated etiquette columnist and author of the forthcoming book, No Vulgar Hotel, The Desire and Pursuit of Venice. She joins us by phone from her office here in Washington. Thanks for joining us, Judith.
I'm delighted to be here.
Before I ask you where you want to go in time travel, this has come up several times with our callers. We're going to need etiquette when we go back there because you are a stranger in a strange time, I guess we would put it. Any advice for our time travelers when they're going back to meet somebody who might be a little shocked by what we have to tell them?
Well, yes, you would have to learn the etiquette, just as you do when you travel in geographically nowadays. People always think that they behave naturally and until they encounter a different culture or that they can deduce behavior from first principles and just do what's sensible. But on the time travel thing,
sure.
I'm continually being accused of wanting to go back in time to when everyone behaved perfectly, which I wouldn't mind doing if I could find out when that is. I think that people who imagine that have not been reading history. And do I want to go back to a Victorian era and live in corsets with no air conditioning? Not really, thank you very much. Or even to the 50s, where I was around, and blatant bigotry was tolerated, officially and otherwise. So it is really, really not a good idea to do that. I'm rather with your callers who go because they have the true reporter instinct, and I'm an old reporter, of wanting to see history firsthand for themselves.
Yeah, and unanswered questions. Is there a specific time we should take you to in this time machine we have today?
Well, my great interest is in Venetian history, and so it would be great fun to go back to Venice in, say, the Renaissance, or a little before, when Venice was more powerful. One would just have to be careful not to step into it when there was a plague going on or something of that nature.
There would have to be a lot of research before any of this time travel. You know, I'm curious, a lot of people treat this, and they treat it rightly, like it would be a job. They have to go back and find something out that they can bring back to us, an unanswered question.
Opposed to just having a jolly old time.
Well, I was going to say, going to Venice in that time period would be a lot of fun. I think you could enjoy yourself. What would your day be like?
So. And yeah. I would be able to find my way around because the city hasn't changed appreciably. And a lot of the same families are still there. The same houses are there. So I think I would feel right at home.
But
as I say, there are times when you really don't want to go.
Yes, absolutely. Do you think the food would be better?
That it would be better?
Different?
No, and it would be slightly different, yes. But Venice has depended on importing food for a long time, so that the main staples would probably be not that different. We have old recipes from that time. We have accounts of parties that Titian and Aretino gave. Great feasts with all kinds of wonderful food, not to mention boatloads of courtesans and such.
And I can imagine this traveler from the future trying to cage an invite to one of these parties.
Well, I think some of those parties were big enough that they wouldn't notice whether you were invited or not.
Well, that violates etiquette, but we can make a special dispensation for you since you are traveling through time. Judith Martin, a.k.a. Miss Manners, is a syndicated etiquette columnist. Her upcoming book is called No Vulgar Hotel, Desire and the Pursuit of Venice. Thanks for joining us from Washington, D.C. We appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Let's go to Sean now. Sean is calling us from South Lyon, Missouri. Or Michigan, I'm sorry. Where do you want to go, Sean?
Well, you know, I'm one of those guys that's not exactly the person that has any big philosophical questions. But I like those mysteries to be solved, especially the ones where nobody knows anything about it. So, you know, I'd be that guy that would want to go back and see, you know, what was on the grassy knoll with JFK. But especially Amelia Earhart. I don't know if there'd be any way to follow her. But, you know what happened? Nobody knows. And those are the kinds of things that I want to figure out.
Yeah, that's a technical problem. Yeah, it's a technical problem since we would have to figure out a place for you to go. And the South Pacific is a large, large and lonely place.
Yep.
But maybe you could fly along. Maybe you could be the answer that she was looking for.
Well, I'm not so sure I'd want to be the co-pilot because nobody does know what happened. But, you know, maybe with radar, who knows what you could do.
Thanks a lot, Sean. Let's call Paul. Paul is calling us from Kendallville, Indiana. You're on the air, Paul.
Hello?
Hey, Paul. Where do you want to go in time?
The place I like to go is 1930s Hollywood.
1930s Hollywood. You just like the clothes, the style? What is it?
What I would like to do, ideal, is to work for someone like Jack Warner or Hal Wallace or Harry Cohn at Columbia Pictures. And they were such outrageous characters and demanding people, but it would just be a thrill to work for someone like that in 1930s Hollywood when things were really popping.
Would you be tempted to throw out some ideas there like, hey, you should do a show about a movie about a shark, a big shark on the East Coast? They'd be like, yeah, we could do that. Would you want to throw some plot lines out there that you think might fly? The Godfather, maybe?
Yeah, I might run it by Daryl Zanuck at the time, since his son Richard made the movies, and see how he would go with them.
It would be interesting to see which movies from today would stand up, at least the plot lines. I could think that a lot of them would not. They would look at you like you were crazy.
Well, Spielberg said one time that because of the success of his movies, he couldn't make Jaws, he couldn't get that produced today because it didn't have enough action in it. And it would be interesting to see because in those days they made so many movies. They didn't rely on five blockbusters.
Sure.
For the entire year.
Sure. Well, Meeting the Stars alone would be great. Thanks for calling us, Paul. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. We're talking now about time travel, and we're taking you wherever you want to go. We want to hear where you want to go. We will talk with Roberta now. Roberta is calling us from McCormick, South Carolina. Roberta, you're on the air. What time and place would you like to go to?
Well, I can't hear you. Can you hear me?
I can hear you just fine. Where do you want to go in the time machine?
Okay, I'd like to go to end of slavery time, or maybe a few years after. I would think Anderson, South Carolina, so I could find out who my family is. I mean, you know, I'm at a point now where I don't know, and I'd love to know.
Have you traced things back genealogically to this one place? Is that right?
Yes, I've traced it back to Anderson County, South Carolina, Iva, but nobody knows anything else, you know?
Well, it's a fascinating question. Do you think if you arrived there, a small town, if we got you to the right time, would you be able to recognize them? Would you know enough to find them?
Well, I know the last name, Klinkscales. You know, if I could just get back there and find Klinkscales, I'm sure I could do something.
What would you tell them about how their family turned out?
Actually, I don't think I'd want to tell them anything because that might, you know, put a kink in there and people start trying to live up to the expectations that I told them, and it might be different in the long run.
Do you think that there would be something they would at least find heartening, though? I mean, just you showing up, I suppose.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, and I think it would be great for everybody concerned, me because I'd know where I came from, and them because they'd know that there's a future for them.
Excellent. Well, thank you for your phone call, Roberta. Let's talk to Pamela. Pamela is in Salem, Oregon. Pamela, where do you want to go?
1366, England.
That sounds a little unsanitary to me. What do you want to do back there?
I would like to observe the plague.
No, you don't. Who wants to go back and see the plague? It sounds horrible.
It does sound horrible. It's morbidly fascinating to me just because no one knew what caused it. People were terrified. They thought it was witchcraft. They thought it was Jews. They had no concept of health care in the sense that we do, and it would be interesting to go back and observe with the knowledge that we have today, as long as I was immune, of course.
You know, the interesting thing would be a lot of people talk about whether they would want to bring back technology that could help. The interesting thing about this is you could go back and simply look at people and say, wash your hands.
Like exactly.
That concept alone, you could be someone who would save a million lives through that simple concept of just telling them where this is coming from.
Right, and keep their cottages clean, and once it's in your village, don't interact with anyone else, right?
But would you talked about as an observer, and you would be immune. Would you want to do anything? I mean, that's the real question, isn't it?
I guess. Absolutely. I think if I was there, I couldn't help intervening and trying to save people's lives, but I just think it would be fascinating to watch people's reactions to it. They didn't understand it. They didn't know what was happening, and it was so sudden.
Well, it would certainly put into perspective the challenges that we face today. You would have stories to tell, I'm sure.
Absolutely, and in the same sense, someone 1,000 years in the future coming back today to look at us suffering from hepatitis and AIDS virus and things of that nature. I'm sure there are people that would be interested in doing that and helping us.
Well, thank you very much for calling, Pamela. When we return from our break, we will take a few more phone calls to talk about where you would like to go in our Talk of the Nation time machine. Our phone number is 800-989-8255. We'll take you anywhere, any place, but through the magic of radio. This is National Public Radio. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. We're traveling through our Talk of the Nation time machine of the air, and we've gotten a number of emails saying where they would like to go if they could go anywhere in history. Brian writes that he'd like to follow Edgar Allan Poe through Baltimore in 1849 to find out what happened to his mysterious death. Deborah was born in 65, but she wants to experience the 1960s while she's still young. I want to take part in the whole peace movement and experience Woodstock firsthand. Beth writes that the person she'd like to meet is Gavrilo Princip, I think I got that right, the young man who assassinated Archduke Franz Ferdinand. She'd like to sit in on the trial of him and his co-conspirators, the man who started World War I. Christopher writes he'd like to go back to ancient Egypt at the time of the construction of the Sphinx and the pyramid complex so that he could know exactly and once and for all how those monuments were actually built and by whom. Let's talk to Ricardo. Ricardo is calling us from San Francisco, California.
Good afternoon. Can you hear me properly?
I can. Where would you like to go?
Well, three tangents in time that are very important to us, because you talked about the atom and Alamogordo. So I would like to go 24 hours before the Big Bang and just sit there in a comfortable spot and watch the activity level that comprised everything that is joined into the Big Bang structure and gave us what our thoughts are about these ideas.
Now, the notion of the comfortable place to watch is really the rub here, because we don't know before the Big Bang if there's plenty of room to stretch out or if you're in an infinitely small space, a little cramped.
I left that as a riddle. and the other places are 24 hours before World War III.
24 hours before World War III. Well, hopefully that is a long, long time in the future. Ricardo, thanks for joining us. Let's talk with Liban in Portland, Oregon. How are you doing, sir?
Oh, I'm doing great.
Where do you want to go?
Liban, actually.
Liban, sorry.
I would like to go to the original library at Alexandria and sneak in a digital camera with enough memory to record all of the information that was lost there.
Wow. From all I hear, that would be you would need a very large data card for that.
Yeah, I hear they're doing wonders with solid-state technology, though. So,
well, is there anything that you, if you had a moment, that you would stop and read? I guess we don't know much of what was there, but there must have been just fascinating browsing, right?
Well, I just know that the more archaeology is revealing about history, the more, in fact, people of that time knew of the same kind of things that we know about in terms of engineering, architecture, mathematics, and so forth. So it'd just be, I would imagine, eye-popping to see all of the knowledge laid out before you.
Thank you very much for calling. We have time for one last phone call. Kitty in Missoula, Montana. Kitty, there's one last stop in the time machine. Where do you want to go?
I would like to be with Chief Joseph and his when he surrendered to the Army, you know, 40 miles south of the Canadian border.
And you could hear that great speech, his famous speech.
It's very famous, and he's a very smart man. I think he was the first human rights advocate in the United States, long before Martin Luther King and whatever, but he was looking to free his people. And what I would like to know is, what did the colonel feel like when he, if it was like his tribe that was being pursued? What would the colonel feel like if it was his family and his distant relatives that had to run 1,800 miles, you know, and get captured 40 miles from the border?
If you had the opportunity, would you tell Chief Joseph what had happened to Native American peoples in the United States? Would you want to lay out that history for
him? I
think
he already knew that, and that's why he ran so hard. But he wanted to protect his people. But what did the colonel feel like? And if it was his family, you know, why didn't he feel like, you know, the freedom of movement and the freedom of having his own family develop and grow? How did the colonel feel? Would he have let him go that 40 miles if it was his family?
This is an excellent question, and you are our last stop in the time machine. Thank you very much, Kitty, for calling us, and thanks to all of our callers. We've worn out the batteries on this thing, and thanks to Neil deGrasse Tyson, Joseph Ellis, and Judith Martin, who all joined us and talked about where they would like to go in time. We will see you later on in time. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News.